And a special appearance, Brian Haney, the voice of JX, with us on a Tuesday. He's going to get some well-deserved vacation. It'll be our last chat with Brian until we get ready for football coming up in August. The voice of Jayhawks joining us, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. Brian, are you all primed and ready to go take a break this week?
Looking forward to it, my man, definitely. We still got about a month to go on baseball, and hopefully it's a great final month. But, yeah, I'm taking the weekend off to go be a part of David Lawrence's daughter's wedding, not as her husband, but as the guy reading the the sermon and all that. My first time as a wedding pastor, official, whatever you want to call it. I don't have the certification for it yet, but by Friday afternoon at 4, I will, and we're doing that down in Florida. So it'll be fun, and not many play-by-play guys get to marry off their color analyst daughter, but
yeah,
special privilege for me, and I'm excited. So it's technically vacation this week, but there's a little bit of work involved, but it's the best kind of work. So
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Excited to do it.
Well, that's pretty cool. You're a man of many talents. We knew that already, and you just add more and more talent to the list.
We'll see how this goes first.
The jury's still out, is what you're saying.
I may be one and done. The one and done rule may be applies to one-time pastors. So.
Oh, I'm sure you'll do just fine. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, with us. All right, we're going to start with basketball real quick because, of course, the big news yesterday was Romeo Langford announcing he's going to stay at home in Indiana. I think a lot of people thought that's what he was going to do. I felt like that's what he was going to do. And when I heard he was going to be announced at his high school, I'm like, dude, the kid will never survive if he picks anybody but Indiana, because there was a huge walk-up. Fans were around the high school. They're all excited. I don't want to go as far to say he's LeBron James, but LeBron James, of course, Akron, Ohio, and so forth and so on, he's their guy. Indiana really loves Romeo Langford, and boy, he made them very happy yesterday with his decision. Disappointed KU fans with it, though.
Did he officially sign the papers?
I guess hasn't. Verbal. It's a verbal commitment, so I guess technically
okay.
Hasn't.
Then I probably can't say anything more, but I would just say that, Kansas has a scholarship to give. They have backup plans in place. I was talking, with some close to the program about contingency plans and all that. And, I can't speak about recruiting unless they're signed. But I would say that this didn't catch anybody on the Kansas staff by surprise.
And, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to fill that spot. It's just a matter of who. And, it's become a situation really in the last 10 years where these graduate transfers that can transfer and play right away at the end of the Invoke thing. And Kansas has surveyed all options, but that's probably about as far as I should go. But I think last night, that specific young man, when the mayor of the state is invited, you probably know what direction it's going.
I think Romeo right now could run for governor of Indiana. He'd win. He made a lot of people
governor,
happy.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Mayor, governor, whatever he wants to be. let's shift to football. Spring football showcase over the weekend. Of course, no actual spring game due to injuries on the line. What were your impressions of Saturday?
We ended up getting more 11-on-11 than I thought we would. And right before the scrimmage started or the practice started, I got a practice sheet with what to expect. And they even went off script there, and I think gave the fans that showed up, more of what folks wanted to see, which is guys going 1-on-1, 11-on-11, and real live action as opposed to, just all drills. And of the live action we saw, I think you definitely had some things to hang your hat on. Everybody wanted to see Corion Harris, the 4-star recruited corner, highest-rated cornerback signee we've ever had. And he ends up getting an interception within the first 2 minutes of the live action, which was great to see on a 50-yard pass deep down over the middle near the goal line. He jumps up and makes an athletic play, which at 6'1", 180, with just incredible athleticism, those are the types of plays you expect him to be able to come up with, when it's a 50-50 ball up in the air and a taller, more athletic corner than you're typically going to see at Kansas is up there making that play. I thought that was great to see. And then, obviously, Miles Kendrick's a guy that everybody had their eyes on, the third quarterback, that's competing right now with Peyton Bender and Carter Stanley. And I thought he did some nice things, too. It was hard to see a ton of separation between the three, and that's kind of the way David Beatty characterized it heading in, that there hadn't been any separation of note. And he likes that. He thought if Miles comes in and he is noticing to be behind the other two, and maybe we don't quite have what we thought we had in him. And yet, if he comes in and blows by the other two, then the other guys haven't improved much in the offseason. But really felt like all three of those guys had their moments. James Sosinski, the KU basketball player that originally came to Kansas as a tight end, then was a basketball walk-on. That's probably what he'll be most famous for. He's now trying to make his name on the football field, and I thought we saw, you know, a little bit of the buzz that had been building around him over the previous 14 practices. Clearly, he's huge. I mean, you remember Ben Johnson a year ago who just signed with the Chargers, an undrafted free agent. Johnson was, you know, 6'4", 6'5"-ish, chiseled, big, but then you see a guy who's 6'7", and I know it's only 3 inches on paper, but it does make a big difference with the long arms. There were a couple of throws that his quarterback kind of hung him out to dry. One of which tipped off his hands and got intercepted, and he would tell you he should have come down with that. But I think because he's so big, in some regards, depending on who the passer is, they feel like they get more chances, and the catch radius is so much longer with a wingspan like that. And so, to me, that's a real weapon now that isn't just a good story anymore that we talk about because he plays both sports, but is a legitimate, hey, this guy should get 3 balls a game type target, and especially when they get down inside the red zone, he should get that kind of attention. And so I thought all of those were amongst the highlights. And then Kazili Flomo is a kid that is a walk-on running back on this team. Flomo, F-L-O-M-O. It'll be a household name like Miller by the time we're in the month of October because this is a guy that isn't necessarily going to set the conference on fire, but I think every time he comes in and gets a carry, whether it's 1 or 2 a game or 7 or 8 a game or whatever, he runs like his hair is on fire. And he hits that hole with reckless abandon and came from the North Dakota School of the Sciences and comes down here and has really been turning heads left and right. And honestly, not that we've polled all 100 guys, but every guy that we've had a chance to talk to off the air, to a man, if you say, hey, list off 3 or 4 guys that have turned heads, Flomo's name comes up on every single player's list. Maybe it's because he's got a cool name to say. I don't know. But
yeah,
that dude is lighting guys up. And, you know, who knows what it turns into, because obviously that's one of KU's deepest positions. I think when you consider Puka coming in, a 4-star running back recruit on top of what they already had there with Dom Williams, and you know, just Khalil Herbert, huge stable of running backs. It's going to be really hard to sit here on May the 1st and try to decipher carries and workload and usage and all that. But the fact that you got a walk on that's coming in and pushing these other guys as well as he is pushing Deron Thompson and some of the other types, I think that's nothing but a good thing. And so he was a guy that stood out to me a little bit, too. You know, you didn't see a ton of red zone offense. They did about an 8-minute portion of practice where they took it inside the 20, and he was a guy that got a lot of the carries once they got inside the 5. So pumped to see what that turns into in the summertime and into the fall. If nothing else, it's a good story. But those were some of the guys that stood out to me, and I think it was a day that if you showed up, you were seeing great weather, they had some fun festivities around the game. We had 5 former NFL guys back, including 3-time Pro Bowler Chris Harris. And then you saw what you hoped to see, which was glimpses of some of these guys you've been hearing about, all of which I thought had their moments, you know, in a more extended scrimmage setting than maybe what was advertised heading in.
I have to throw this out here. When you, Sosinski, I saw the fun little nugget there, I think, on Twitter after the Final Four, that he has more career Final Four points than any Missouri Tiger ever. That still cracks me up because Missouri's never been to the Final Four. Did you hear that one?
Right. I hadn't heard that. You know, I've been calling him, you know, Mr. 100% and the greatest single-season shooter in the history of Kansas basketball because he was 3-for-3. And it's one thing to be 2-for-2 with, you know, those points coming, you know, inside the paint and all that, but he banks in a shot. And I realize the game's out of reach and all that, but you get in and you're shooting in a football arena, a football stadium, 80,000 people watching you. He just catches it and banks it in from 12 feet on the biggest stage of his life. Yeah. I realize that nothing to do with the outcome of the game at that point, but to me that took some courage. And so 3-for-3, greatest shooting percentage numbers in Kansas history, and if that's the only season he plays, he'll always have that to tell his grandkids about and show them the ring from his Final Four. I don't know if he will come back or not. That's not really been addressed at this point. Kansas, if Udoka comes back, is going to have so much depth in the post that you don't really need that practice player. But I think genuinely the guys and the coaching staff all like him enough that it may be an option. But I know when they first, you know, asked him to come be a part of it all, it was originally kind of like an NBA 10-day contract. Let's just see how you do.
Right.
And once he passed his first 10-day contract, they said, okay, you can play the rest of the season. But I don't know that it was ever a beyond this 1 year thing, because this was a desperate times, desperate measures type move. But I think he's been likable enough that it's at least a conversation worth having. And I love what David Beatty said about being in that culture of Kansas basketball for 4 months. If that doesn't put some swagger, to extra skip in your step and some hair on your chest in terms of, you know, look at me, and I'm now walking not arrogantly, but proudly, taller, more confident. You know, I'm going to carry that over into the football locker room and walk with a little bit more achievement to my poise and my stride. I don't know what would. So to me, I think that was a very positive thing, even in terms of what it does for him as a football player. And hopefully we'll see him do what he was brought here to do, catch touchdowns, be a difference maker for Kansas football.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. Thank them for sponsoring our segments with Brian throughout this season. Second year in a row that they have done that, and hopefully we can get them on board for a third year as well. You brought up Chris Harris, and there was a comment that Chris Harris made that I read in the Kansas City Star, and it bothered me. There was two words I wish he wouldn't have said. I've talked with some KU fans about this comment. I had an interesting conversation with a KU fan who cares about football. You know, there's KU fans, let's be honest, that don't care about football until football's good. And they're all about basketball. And then all of a sudden they go 12-1, win the Orange Bowl. And it's like, okay, now I'm the biggest KU football fan ever. And I've always said that when you really need your fans is when you struggle. You don't need your fans when everything's going great. You need your fans to support you when you're really struggling. And that's what this football program has been doing here for quite some time at the University of Kansas. And you're probably aware of the quote, but Chris Harris said, you know, we were pretty much at the death penalty. We're still trying to overcome that. When you say the words death penalty, I think that's laughed at somewhat by outsiders. And I had this conversation with a KU fan, and he said the same thing I was thinking. The death penalty doesn't seem comparable from the standpoint that this was self-inflicted by Kansas. This wasn't the NCAA, probation, stripping scholarships. I mean, it was a rough situation he inherited, but the death penalty, that's kind of maybe the wrong choice of words there.
Yeah, that seems a little strong to me.
Yeah.
And obviously the scholarship situation, as strapped as they've been and continue to be,
right,
now just north of 70, is something that feels a lot like that at times when you're trying to keep up with everybody else operating with 85, and you're at such a disadvantage, even to begin with, when you're playing in a conference that had 8 teams go to bowl games this year, and there was only one other team that didn't go to a game, and that was Baylor, and they got a brand new stadium, and you're trying to compete with that, even with some of the issues that they've had, that's still really tough to compete with. And so then, on top of having the challenge of playing in a league with so many tradition-rich schools, you have the scholarship numbers cut so dramatically that you're operating at 20-plus scholarships fewer than the competition. It feels like that, but it's not as bad as that. And I think there's a lot of things you can do to gradually get that number up, which Kansas has done. And eventually, you know, I think in the next couple of years, they'll be back to where they want to be. But it's probably just, you know, a little bit too strong of a word choice there. And yet, we got to remind ourselves, I mean, he's what? 29, 30 years old right now, and has heard that term as it applies to SMU and some other schools, and probably thought, you know, best of times, worst of times. In my head, word association, well, worst of times is death penalty,
yeah,
so I'm going to use this phrase. But I don't think it was quite to that point, and yet at the same time, we can't undersell what a huge challenge this has been for David Beatty's staff to take that on and try and get it up to where you are competing with such lofty Big 12 brethren. And there's still got a ways to go, obviously, but I think if you can keep continuity there, if they can just show enough in the win column this fall to keep this group going forward, they're starting to get the types of players and retaining the number of players within a class. And by that I mean You know, you don't have as many guys leaving right away. You go back and you look at the first class he's had, and only about half of them are still there. You know, these last couple of classes, I think they've got the type of kid that's going to stick and stay. Not all 25, that never happens. But, you know, with more consistency to where your numbers don't take longer to build back up. And so I hear where Chris is coming from, and I'm sure he's got a little bit of question marks about that. But, man, what a great ambassador. And certainly I was thrilled to get to talk to him on the network broadcast, because he's a guy that has done so much to stay engaged with Kansas football. Mm-hmm. And he tweets about it. He talks about it. He's proud, even though the program has gone through some rough times ever since he left. And, you know, to have Monday Night Football and they're given the starting lineups, and you got Aqib Talib and Chris Harris these last few years for Denver, both saying Kansas Jayhawks, that's a pretty great publicity for our program. And here's a guy that chooses to come back here as often as he can. So love that guy, love that ambassador, and we need more of them. Hopefully we'll see the next wave of Kansas football talent not only make it to the pros, but have impactful careers in the pros like Keith and Chris have had. I think Ben Heaney now in Houston is looking forward to a bigger role this year, and hopefully we'll start to see guys like Dorrance Armstrong with the Dallas Cowboys have a big pro career, and next year Daniel Wise as well. Because these are the types of guys, all the guys I mentioned, that once they climb to the top of the professional mountain, they won't forget about those that helped them get there. And amongst the first that not only represent KU proudly, but many of which are giving back to KU monetarily, which is huge. So Chris Harris is a stud in my book, that's for sure. And probably just a little bit too strong a word choice there.
Sure. Okay, so I want to go another thing that David Beatty said, because this is another point of conversation. If I'm having this conversation with a couple of KU fans, I'm guessing other KU fans are having this conversation as well. And I think it's it is somewhat hard to understand, and even for me, I think you can explain it a lot better than most because you're a lot closer to the program. When people hear David Beatty say recently, well, it's going to take another 2 or 3 years to get to a true 85 scholarships. And this is his fourth year. People are trying to figure out, well, why does it take so long? And if he's talking about another 2 to 3 years to get the 85 true scholarships, that would mean that David Beatty would have to be the head coach at KU for at least 6 or 7 years, which most programs aren't going to have patience to give you 6 or 7 years. Now, maybe KU will, to get up to back to 85 or around that number. He has said down about 30 plus scholarships when he started, and granted, he should have had a good idea what he was getting himself into when he took the job at KU, and I don't think there's a lot of people knocking on the door to say, hey, I want to be the head coach of Kansas football. And he's taken on the challenge, and I think he's a stand-up guy that says mostly the right things, and he cares about his players. But their perception out there is, why is this taking so long? Not necessarily, I haven't heard it from KU fans about, why is it taking so long to be bowl eligible? I'm not hearing that. I think KU fans have pretty realistic expectations. I think they're disappointed last year that the team didn't win more games. They thought they'd take a step in the right direction. But there is some confusion out there from when I talk with KU fans about, why is it taking so long to get back up to that 85 number at the University of Kansas with the scholarships? And then some people have pointed out, listen, and I know it's a different time and era, I get it, but they're interesting points. Bill Snyder, his second year, they won 5 games. Third year, they won 7 games. And he inherited, most people would say, even a worse situation, where they almost dissolved their football program. And then the other thing that was thrown out there that I heard from somebody yesterday, which maybe is not apples to apples, Central Florida goes winless, and the next year they go undefeated with Scott Frost, now the head coach at Nebraska. So how would you explain the scholarship situation with the numbers? Because we hear different numbers with different stories that come out about down 30, they were down 20, now we have 70, but then we have the walk-ons. Can you explain that for folks out there?
Well, I can explain some of it. I mean, there's more to the process of getting certain guys to come in, up to your 25 in a given class. Other guys that want to come as walk-ons and work their way into scholarships, and that's where being internal, you got to let the head coach and the AD talk about that a little bit if you can respect that. But point is, you can only sign 25 in a given year, and obviously 85 is the threshold overall. But every program, every conference, all across the country, has a hard time keeping close to that 25 intact because some guys transfer because playing time isn't there. Uh-huh. Some guys' grades don't allow them to stay. Some guys get hurt and have career-ending injuries. Like KU had an outstanding running back who wound up having a heart condition and never got to play a game. And that was just a swing and a miss that they thought was going to be Octavius Matthews, a huge addition, and ultimately never plays a game. And yet that's you know, a guy you were committed to the entire recruiting period. It's not there. And so for all these reasons, you have, you know, various guys that don't end up playing their way for the full 4 years or whatever the case may be. Transfers, guys that you know, you hate to have too many guys not make the cut academically, but then on occasion, at every program, you have guys get in trouble with the law, they leave for that reason. And so it's not as simple as, okay, well, give me 3 years and we'll be built back up. Or give me 4 years, we'll build back up. When you're climbing out of that type of deficit, you need a lot of things to go well. You talk about NFL GMs hitting on guys in the draft, and by that I mean guys that they draft pan out to be what they hope they would be, mm-hmm. and you're not going 3 out of 7 or 4 out of 7, 7 out of 7. All these guys wound up starting and playing their entire contracts. Well, in college football, rarely do you hit on all 25 guys.
Right.
You know, and so it's been hard. And like we mentioned, you know, less than half of his original class is still there. I think with the last couple of classes, they've got the types of guys that are going to be able to stick and stay, and you build up those numbers a lot faster. And through the walk-on program, able to cultivate some guys that have earned scholarships, but they aren't your true, you know, sign them straight out of high school type guys, and equip them with the scholarship right away there. Now, you know, what you said about Coach Snyder, and I have so much reverence and respect for Coach Snyder. I think he's a guy that if he coached on the coasts, you know, in a conference that wasn't in a flyover section of states, you know, where the media is at and all that on the coast, he would probably be exalted even more and you know, looked upon with even more respect and hype than what he gets being in the center of the country. But I think having said that, what we have to remember as we talk about a rebuild in 2018 versus a rebuild 30 years ago is that, man, think about it. Back in the Big 8 days, you know, you had 7 conference games and 4 non-con games. In the Big 12 days, you had, you know, 8 conference games and 4 non-con games. In the Big 8 days, like, let's talk about, you know, where it was at when Mangino took over, for example. You had half of your conference games against teams that were either on a similar plane as you or within reaching distance, okay? Now, if you're Kansas, you've got 9 league games. 8 of the 9 are against bowl teams. The 9th of the 9 is against a team that you know, just has a brand-new $300 million stadium. And then you get to schedule 3 games outside of the league, but realistically, where you're at right now, you can't schedule all patches. You can't go D2 with all of them. And the D2 team they schedule next year is a scary-looking one in Nickel State, but that's a conversation for a different day. Point is, you got to try to find a couple of teams from other major conferences that are within your wheelhouse. But even if you schedule really well there, let's say you win 2 out of your 3 non-con games, you're going to be the underdog in every single conference game, and suddenly you got one more of them. Whereas when Mangino was taking over, or Bill Snyder before that at K-State, I mean, think about the landscape of the conference. Let's just go back to 2002 real quickly. I know it's the top of the hour here. But Oklahoma State wasn't what they are now. Neither was Missouri. You had Iowa State went through a nice period with Dan McCarney for a while there, Seneca Wallace as a quarterback, but then they dipped back down. You had Texas Tech before the Leach year got going. They were ripe for the picking. Baylor was atrocious. You know, my point is, it was a league where there were a lot more days showing up on a Saturday where you felt like you had a chance. And so nowadays, with more conference games in a tougher league, it's just a completely different rebuild. And, you know, back in the day with Coach Snyder, and again, all the respect in the world, but they could schedule 4 games against lesser foes and be 2/3 of the way to bowl eligibility and just have to pluck off 1 or 2 more in conference in a much more ripe-for-the-taking league. And again, that's not to make light of any of that, because he's had sustained success worthy of a Hall of Fame career. I'm just saying it's apples and oranges when you look at the rebuild process now compared to then. And when I think about what these coaches are up against, if you're at the bottom of the food chain trying to claw your way to the top, holy smokes, is it difficult. There's no off days. There's no gimmies. There's nothing you can not chalk it up, you know, and take it for a given or a granted win. And that's why I think it's so much tougher nowadays. But you know what? As Mangino said, you got to keep sawing wood. They're doing that right now in those football offices. And if they could just make a leap from the one or two wins to the four-win type territory, I think that shows that real progress is coming. Allows you, I think, to really get people on board, whether it's donors, fans, recruits, whatever. And that's the type of leap they hope to make in the season ahead. But, man, it's been tough. I would have thought that leap would have come last year. But, obviously, you know, for a lot of reasons it didn't. But that's what you're up against. Whereas in 1995 or in 2002, you could make the leap to four wins before you even got to October just based on scheduling. Can't do that anymore.
So I've got to ask this question, because I will guarantee you K-State fans that are listening are thinking the same question, and they're going to want me to ask it. And if I don't, they're going to probably put me on a post, okay? So are you saying that KU has a tougher rebuild situation now than K-State did when Bill Snyder came to Manhattan?
I'm saying college football today, 30 years later, the way the conference schedule works, the competitive balance of the Big 12 Conference, which is night and day different than what it was then. And we have to go back and look at the Big 8 records the year he took over. I'm speaking off the top of my head here without, you know, looking at who went to a bowl game the year before and all that. But, I mean, even within his own state, his rival was down.
Right.
David Beatty's rival isn't down at all.
Yeah,
you know, and so, to me, it is set up to be much more challenging just based on the sheer number of conference games and Division I major conference games that you have to play in a given year compared to what it used to be. And so, to me, that's where it's apples and oranges. But make no mistake, and don't let anybody out there twist my words, the Kansas guy isn't coming on and trying to belittle what Coach Snyder did.
Sure.
I have so much respect for that man, and I think what he did is nothing short of remarkable, incredible, and deserves all the statues to be erected and all the hype to be given, because, wow, what a job. And how blessed are we, no matter who you cheer for, whether you wear purple or crimson and blue, we got two Bills running this state as good as any in America at what they do, one on the basketball side and one on the football side. And they help to make our state, you know, notorious with things other than just Dorothy. So I'm excited that we've got a great tradition in both places, and really hopeful that the Kansas football tradition will get back to what it was, you know, 10 years ago with Reising, but decades before that. I think it's quickly lost upon the next generation, the Gen X folks. Hey, man, we had Sayers.
Yeah.
And we had Riggins and Hadel and Evans. We had some Goliaths, not just college football, but all of football, that the folks, you know, born in the last 20 years have no idea, because all they know is really Kansas' struggles. But, man, there's a foundation there that if we could harken back to those days and get some winning now, it's easy to point, as they like to say, we stand on the shoulders of giants. It's easy to point to some giants that got this Kansas program on the map in the first place.
Just to throw it out there, Bill Snyder, first year, was 1-10 overall, did not win a conference game, 0-7, finished last in the Big 8. His second year, 5-6 overall, won two conference games, finished 6th in conference. His third year, 7-4, 4-3 in conference, finished 4th, middle of the pack in the Big 8 in his third season. But and that's the thing you get in trouble with. Like, when you compare era to era, it's always different. And so you're right. Apples and oranges can be. I think the bottom line, what we're saying is K-State, and I hear this a lot from K-State fans, listen, we almost had our football program dissolved. I mean, we were going to get kicked out of the conference. That was how bad it was for K-State back then. And that was a really, really difficult situation. Bill Snyder did a great job with it. And I think we can agree, and I think K-State fans can agree too, that KU, David Beatty, inherited a very difficult situation as well. And now we'll see if he has enough time to get it turned around to where KU can be successful again in football. I think we can all agree on that, don't you?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I'm a huge, you know, fan of David Beatty. He's the person and the coach, and nobody's pulling for him harder. But, yeah, obviously this is an important year, and I think that if you saw what I saw on Saturday, there's a lot of reasons to be excited on the defensive side of the ball. And man, that one position that's more important than any other position in any other team sport out there, more important than a point guard, starting pitcher, a closer, whatever, the position of quarterback, if they can just find something there. We don't need Todd Reising. Give me a Bill Whittemore. If you can find me a Bill Whittemore, we can get this thing going again.
Yeah.
And by that I mean we don't need the savior that posts all the records, but we need a guy that's serviceable, consistent, tough, durable, a great leader with some moxie. Hopefully they found it. We'll find out September 1st.
I know we're running long, but since it's the last time, I got to ask you one quick question before we get to Off the Well and wrap it up. I would be remiss if I don't bring this up. Dorrance Armstrong drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. How big is that for a program, a fourth-round draft pick?
I think it's great. You know, it's not, you know, huge for the program like a first-rounder would be. You know, we went between Dana Stubblefield and Aqib Talib. I don't know how many years that was, 93 to 2008. You do the math, what, 15 years?
Yeah.
You know, so it's a first-rounder that really gets you excited, first-day, second-day picks. But a guy like that that I think has a chance to produce at a much higher level than his draft slot, a Texas kid getting to play for, you know, what Jerry Jones would say is America's team, getting to play on a franchise that's has had a lot of success and certainly gets a lot of front and center exposure. I think it's going to be great for Kansas, and I think that Dorrance is a guy I would bet on to have a fruitful career. So good for him. And, you know, his good buddy from Lewisville, Texas, Daniel Wise, was getting set for the spring game as that draft pick was made. And Lewisville's about 30 minutes north of Dallas. So I think there was jealousy, Daniel, for Dorrance. There was excitement. Hey, he's going to play for the team I grew up watching. Good for him. And Daniel's going to be right there, you know, in the NFL with him next year, which is really exciting. And, you know, he could be a better ambassador. So hopefully, while this was a quieter draft day for Kansas, you know, Ben Johnson signing an undrafted rookie free agent contract with the Chargers, hopefully next year, you know, you'll have a handful of guys. We'll see if Joe Denine projects to be that or if he's just a really productive college player. I think, you know, if he has a healthy and productive senior season, he's proven he's going to get a chance with somebody. But you know, look on down the line, like Steven Sims has a lot to prove and yet has a lot of potential to prove that in his senior year. There's several guys that I think could play their way into draft pick status next year. But to me, Daniel Wise, you know, who already has a brother in the league, is a guy that is an absolute rock to be playing on Sundays. Can't wait to see what that turns into. I'm really hopeful he's the poster boy for coming back, having one more year, and enhancing your draft stock by two or three rounds because of it. Time will tell if that's the case, but we're really fortunate he came back.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Did you hear about the story about Larry Johnson, former running back for the Chiefs yesterday? Did you hear the story?
No, I did not.
Okay, Larry Johnson got a letter from the Kansas City Chiefs, I guess here recently, letting him know that he had not cashed or deposited a $1,200 paycheck from 2010, which means the Chiefs accounting department has some explaining to do. So 8 years later, he gets this letter in the mail saying, hey, you know, you might want to cash that deposit, whatever, $1,200 check. They said that if he invested that at the time in 2010 in Amazon, he would have $14,000 instead of $1,200. That would have been a good investment. So my question to you, the off the wall, Mr. Haney, is what is the worst thing you have ever forgotten to do? Larry forgot to cash or deposit a $1,200 check. What's the worst thing you have ever forgotten to do?
Wow, that's a great question. Man, worst thing I've ever forgotten to do.
I forgot my sister. I was supposed to pick her up when I was in high school. She was in junior high track practice. I was supposed to pick her up after school. I had my farmer's permit or whatever. I could drive. And I had so many things on my mind, and I got home, which is 18 miles outside of school. So I had to go 18 miles out in the country. That's where we lived. I pulled in. I walked right into the house, and my mom said, where's your sister? I never once crossed my mind I had forgotten something. You know, sometimes you forget something. You know you forgot something. You can't think about what it was. You're trying to figure it out. It never crossed my mind. I was so, you know, involved in other thoughts in between my ears. And then she said, oh, no, I'll turn around, go back and get her. Like, no, that's okay. Your dad already went in to get her. And that was before we had cell phones. I didn't have a cell phone at the time, so they could say, hey, you forgot your sister. Turn around and get her. That was a pretty big thing I forgot, but luckily she was okay. So that gives you some time to think about what you have forgotten.
Funny, man. I don't have anything good. I'm going to end our season finale with off-the-wall questions of the thoughts. You know, I'm a big memorabilia collector, and when I was living in Lubbock as the voice of the Red Raiders, there was a show that Joe Montana was signing at in Kansas City. And it was a great excuse to drive back home and see friends and family and get to meet Joe Montana. And I had this full-sized San Francisco 49ers helmet already signed by Jerry Rice. And I thought, how cool would it be to get them both on that, right?
Yeah.
So I buy the autograph ticket online in advance. Just got to pack my bags, hop in the car, and drive 10 hours there to come home. And in all my rush to get out the door with my bags packed, my laptop, my work to take with me and all that on this one-off weekend that I had, I forgot the freaking helmet. and I didn't realize it until I was 5 hours up the road in Oklahoma City.
Oh, no.
Turned it back at that point.
Oh.
I had this $225 autograph ticket to have signed this helmet. So I had to get to Kansas City and buy a whole nother helmet for $200 more to have something for him to sign. And then he didn't have, you know, the autograph next to Jerry Rice like I always planned.
So
that wasn't a huge mistake like forgetting your sister, but it was something that multiplied into a $425 mistake by the time the ball set on.
It was a bit of a costly mistake is what you're saying, yeah.
No doubt.
Well, at
no
least
doubt.
You got autographed by both of them, just on separate helmets. Hey, man, we always enjoy talking with you, and we're going to miss our weekly chats with you, but somehow we're gonna grit down, we're going to bear through it, we're going to talk to you again coming up in August. What do you want to say to the KU fans out there before we let you go, and we'll talk to you again in August?
Yeah, well, thanks for a great season of tuning in here. It's an absolute blast playing a wrestling coming on with Wade than anybody in the state, and there's no probably. That's a definitely. So you fans that tune in loyally and support the show, we are so grateful. You fans that tune in loyally and support the Jayhawks, you mean the world. It's going to be a great fall. I really believe we're going to see some tangible progress. I know I said that a year ago, but I think you saw glimpses of it on Saturday on the defensive side. And if we can get that quarterback situation figured out, I think it'll be a fall where we take a step forward. But in basketball, I mean, if Udoka comes back, which I still think he will, this is a preseason top two or three team in the country with a chance to make plans for Minneapolis and back-to-back Final Fours, which we haven't seen since 2002-03 under Roy Williams. So it's going to be a fun sports calendar ahead. But we'll get through those summer months and the dog days. We'll have our affiliates tour at some point, probably in July, and come out and see you guys and have a chance to talk some KU at that point. But in the meantime, well, thanks for a great season. There were so many twists and turns. From the Billy Preston saga to huge wins up and down the schedule, from non-con to inside conference play, 14 straight, 15th Final Four, a Hall of Fame induction for Bill Self. I mean, wow. A trip to Italy before all that got going. We are so blessed as Jayhawk fans and blessed to have great affiliates like this one in Glen Elder and Beloit. So thank you guys for your support, and thank you, Wade, for your coverage throughout the year. Hopefully, I will see you in a couple of months on the affiliates tour, and we'll get fired up for Big 12 Media Days at that point, and hopefully, you know, be talking about a Kansas football season that we look back on, similar to the 03 year and Mangino's second year, where that corner was finally turned. That, you know, that's my hope and my prayer for KU football in the fall, and I think there's a decent shot we'll get to see that. Hey, thanks again, my man. Appreciate you greatly, and thanks to everybody at Anderson Insurance for making these reports possible.
Absolutely. Have fun at the wedding, buddy.
Hey, you too. Have fun on your trip as well. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you all throughout the season by Anderson Insurance Agency. Do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.